The views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hernco Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hernco Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the PC movement should be referred to Hernco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 so which time you will be told to shut it. On behalf of Hernco Radio Network,
I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to take the gloves off. Welcome to Politics Lobby 4. It's time to get out of your seat and make a little noise. Now get ready for the truth. The Politics Cafe. Frontline with Kit Lane. The Extreme Court. The Conservative Woman. And America Today Live. Please try to remain calm. This will be your last warning. Politics Lobby 4.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe, www.herncrow.com, and the ASI Radio Network. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. Politics Cafe is a very easy-to-reach cafe. You can go to Politics Lobby 4, that's Politics Lobby and the number 4.com, and there's an orange bar right across the top underneath the header there that you can punch and we'll bring you right in here. And I want to say welcome to everybody that's in the room tonight. Wow, we got quite a crowd in the cafe here tonight. It looks like there's well over 50 people in on board here, and I hope to be hearing from each and every one of you at some point. I know we always got a few people that are always just going to be in text out there, and but the mic is always going to be open. Anybody who wants to speak on the mic tonight, just please raise your hand. Make it real easy. No mic jumping tonight. That's it. For any of the new guys that are in the room here, the admins will bounce you in a heartbeat. But at any rate, folks, it's what a weekend, huh? You never know what's going to bounce down. I personally have been a nervous wreck. I'll be honest with you. I'm coming down here. I'm doing the father of the bride thing, and it's nuts. My eldest daughter is getting married in about 5 weeks, and it is coming down to the wire. The preparations that have to be made and stuff. And, of course, you know, Dad doesn't really get too involved in much of the preparations, just paying for them all. But it's been a nut. It's just been nutty here. Wife and daughter have been conspiring on the phone to actually drive me into the poorhouse along with this wedding. And it's just going crazy. But it's going to be a great time. It's my eldest daughter. I'm very, very proud of. She's been a good girl. And it's a real daddy's little girl scene. I mean, folks, so if all of a sudden I just stop talking, someone blow the horn or something, because you never know. My mind has been going in a million different places at once. But we do have a few things on the political front here that got to be addressed here tonight. And as I flow through this, it's tough. It's really tough to decide exactly where to start. But the first one I'm going to start with is one that I picked up here the other day. Now, folks, I keep hearing people crying about the economy, some of the rural sections of the world. Well, listen to this one down off the AP Newswire. in the financial news section on Saturday, help wanted ads go unanswered in the West. Record low unemployment in the West creates tough working conditions for business owners. This is out of Helena, Montana. The owner of a fast food joint in Montana's booming oil patch found himself outsourcing the drive-through window to a Texas telemarketing firm. Not because it's cheaper, but because he can't find workers. Record low unemployment across parts of the West has created tough working conditions for business owners, who in places are being forced to boost wages or be creative to fill their jobs. John Francis, who owns a McDonald's in Sydney, Montana, said he tried advertising in a local newspaper and even offered up to $10 an hour to compete with higher-paying oil field jobs. Yet the only calls were from other business owners upset they would have to raise wages too. Of course, you know, Francis' current employees also wanted a pay hike. I don't know what the answer is, Francis said. There's just nobody around that wants to work. Unemployment rates have been as low as 2% this year in places like Montana and nearly as low in neighboring states. Economists cite such factors as an aging workforce and booming tourism economies for the tight labor market. For places like Montana, it has been a steady climb in the nearly two decades since the timber and mining industry recession. The state approached double-digit unemployment levels in the 80s and began the slow crawl back in the early 1990s. This is actually the biggest economic story of our time, and we don't quite gasp it because it's been 15 years in the making, said economist Larry Swanson, director of the O'Connor Center for the Rocky Mountain West at the University of Montana. The U.S. Department of Labor reports the Mountain West region, covering eight states along the Rocky Mountains, has the lowest overall unemployment rate in the nation. The region hit an all-time low of 3.4% in May. And hang on here. I don't know why, but about.com is terrorizing my my screen here. In Jackson Hole, the Four Seasons report still had openings in the Four Seasons Resort. Still had openings in late July. The problem has created longer hours and tougher working conditions for current employees. For years, the resort has imported dozens of workers from Eastern Europe who often come as much for the summer recreation opportunity as the money. This year, however, that wasn't enough, and so for the first time, the resort also sent recruiters to a high school job fair. And it only helped a little. It's been a struggle finding employees this summer, Terry said. Economists say there are a number of reasons why parts of the West are feeling the labor pinch. Established baby boomers, including retirees, have been moving into Montana from the mountain for the mountain views and recreation, bringing with them money for new homes that fuel construction job growth, said Swanson. Along the way, younger people have moved away, searching for bigger paychecks, as the state's wages still lag behind other areas and are slowly increasing overall. Now the aging workforce is unable to expand to meet the demands of the job market, Swanson said. He said the problem is compounded by the fact that employers accustomed to paying relatively low wages have been slow to increase salaries. Montana wages have historically been among the lowest in the country and still rank near the bottom. The silver lining is for workers is that wages are now growing at the third fastest rate among U.S. states. Now, workers with more options in some places are unwilling to take $12 an hour jobs. The problem could get worse as more baby boomers retire, Swanson said. By 2030, Montana and Wyoming are predicted to have among the oldest populations in the U.S., with about 26% of residents 65 or older, Swanson said. That compares to 19.7% predicted nationally. We thought the labor crunch wouldn't come until 2012, but it's already arrived in a lot of these fast-growing areas. As a result, you'll find older workers working longer. People will sort of linger in the workforce. The employers will make it worth their time to. Swanson added the phenomenon of quasi-retirement with older workers cutting back on hours, but still heading to the office will grow, while international workers will be drawn to the region. Younger workers who used to leave will find it worth their while to stay. And on and on and on. It's nothing really but good news here. I need to read the rest of the report to you. But this is happening all around. And I think that the biggest part about all this that everybody really needs to look at there is the fact that wages are having to go up just to attract employees. All right? You know, we cited here back in, I believe it was February of this year, that, you know, we are at an all-time high as far as the average national wage, which was at $18.73 an hour. That's the average national wage. Not a bad paycheck out there, if you know, if you can find where it's happening. And it looks to me like the Midwest is where it's going to go, or at least the upper, or the western part of it, Montana, Wyoming, and cowboy country. You know, and there's work out there. The biggest part of it out there, what they didn't mention here, is who's stealing all the jobs, and that's the mining and the lumber industries. You know, these are places that they were crying about 25, 30 years ago about having the land denuded and blah, 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 blah. And if you folks will remember back then, they started getting into cutting out patches of woodland and replanting them as they went along and did it. Well, they're actually harvesting, you know, over the last 5-6 years, they've been harvesting trees that they planted 25 and 30 years ago. So it's an ongoing thing. You know, this has been proper forest management, you know, conducted by capitalists. Oh, my goodness, the capitalists, what have they done? Well, you know what they've done? They've made it a whole lot better for everybody else out there. That's what they've done. You know, stop and think about this for a minute. And like I said, the biggest part about all this is the fact that wages are going up for everyone everywhere. And everybody's looking at the same thing. The place that I live up here in western Massachusetts, we are basically a tourist trap. And you see the same thing. Every single one of the stores and every single one of the little businesses around here has got help wanted signs hanging in the window. They cannot find help to do it. It's tough, you know. And this is not the kind of stuff that you can hire illegal aliens that can't speak the language for. You know, and it requires it. And people are holding out until they start offering money. Our local McDonald's right here pays close to $10 an hour just to start. And if you've been there 6 months and you show any kind of attention to detail, you're going to be getting more than $10 an hour. You know, I think that's McDonald's, okay? We're talking double, you know, double whatever the minimum wage is out there. You know, the minimum wage is a joke. You know, I don't know why they ever bothered doing all that this year. The Democrats had to say, well, we did something. All right, hey, looks like we're already getting a little bit of response to this. Ramona, you have your hand up. Glad to see you here tonight. Go right ahead. Speak your piece, kiddo.
A report came out today that 46% of the poor own a three-bedroom house with a garage. 80% have air conditioning. 75% have a car. 30% have two cars. 97% have cable TVs, 62% have cable and satellite, 97% have VCRs. The so-called poor are actually healthier than the ones that are out there working and making a living. I think that kind of goes along with what you're saying. I'm tired of listening to the whiny liberals that try to convince the world that Bush is an evil person that is not intelligent. He's a very intelligent man, and anybody that doubts that is being foolish. I don't know what else. Oh, they have cell phones. They have two TVs. I mean, you name it. They got it, so I'm just kind of tired of it. There's jobs to be had. Our economy's great. The president's done a great job. Maybe not in everything, but in everything that to me is important, and that's national security. I'll relinquish the mic.
Well, thank you, Ramona. One conservative guy, you've got your hand up there. Go right ahead. I know you got something good to add here.
One of the things that kills me about the fallacies as it pertains to the economy is, quite frankly, the fact that the median income has risen over $3,000 since this administration took office. Again, it's a fallacy that all of these are burger-flipping jobs, and they most certainly are not. One of the things that I find interesting, however, is people will make excuses for staying stuck in the ruts in which they find themselves in without gravitating and indeed moving to where the job flows, the market fluctuation ultimately is. Someone here in the Powell Talk Virtual Auditorium says that debt has risen. Every administration, including the previous administration, the Clinton administration, ran debt. The projected, and I think that this is the operative word often overlooked, the projected surplus, okay, was higher But we didn't have a September 11th attack. We didn't have all the natural disasters that have sadly befallen this administration. I would happen to say that given the cards that had been dealt to President Bush, and I am no Bush lover, nor will I be a Bush basher, okay, the man has done a good job. But there is a selective mentality out there that says just because he's Republican, just because he's a compassionate conservative, and I'm still trying to figure out what in the world that means, it's a bad thing. Folks, I don't care who you are or who you vote for, be objective, look at the facts, don't merely put forward rhetoric.
Hey, thanks, it was well put. You know, and it's it, what the biggest part about it is I mean, the amount of tax surpluses that have come in over the projections, you know, are the tax money that we are taking in now is way higher than the amount that we took in during the tax years when it was higher. But stay tuned tonight. I actually got more good news on the tax front. Mitt Romney's got a hell of a plan coming up here, how to cut taxes and pay for health care. It's really good. Mr. Tornado Lancaster, you have got your hand up. Go right ahead, my friend.
Well, the article you just read to us here was basically the argument for a guest worker program. Yeah, that's why I believe that the government as a whole, the Bush administration, the Democrats, and the Republicans and alike, are scheming at this very moment of how they can give us a guest worker program. And they're going to point to articles such as you just read right now. You know, the truth of the matter is, the answer is very simple. You pay people more. You pay them until people will work there. If it's $15 an hour, it's $15 an hour. If you're going to pay $4.75 for your Big Mac, so be it. Things aren't good for you anyhow. But you know, it all comes down to business basically unwilling to do so. You know, the competition, you know, is too much. You know, they want cheap labor. And they want it yesterday. And the government right now is scheming, trying to find a way to give it to us and still get elected the next cycle.
Well, I suppose in a way you can take a look at it and say that, but, you know, I think the point that I tried to make was just exactly what you were saying. You know, that what they're finding that they have to do here is raise wages to attract it. You know, there's a lot of these jobs, you know, that just cannot be filled this way. Now, grant you, there are illegal aliens out there doing stuff, slapping sheetrock up, doing painting here and there. You know, a lot of the stuff you can't trust them with, they're not doing. But, you know, they are cracking down on this. You know, as far as a guest worker program, look, we've always had one of those. You know, workers who are here in a guest worker program are here illegally, and we don't really have a problem with that. It's the illegals that are here that we have a problem with, the ones that are floating all the way in here from wherever. Now, let's face it. I mean, look at this guy that was from did the murders down in Jersey there a couple of weeks ago. He was from Peru, of all places. I'd love to know how he made his way all the way up here from Peru. But, no, the point in fact here is that this shortage of workers is driving prices up. You know, labor is a commodity. You know, I have always stated this on this program 100 times. You know, it's a commodity just like any other commodity in any other marketplace around the world. And what determines the value of any commodity is supply and demand. And where you have a low supply and a high demand, you have a high price. Period. That's the way labor works. You know, it's for myself, I've never had any bones about telling somebody my age that, look, if all you're worth is minimum wage, buddy, then you wasted your own life. You know, by the time you hit 40 or 50 years old, you best have a damn good skill and be working at it. You know, or climbing the corporate ladder. I mean, that's the way it works. It's the way it works for darn near every single one of us out there. You know, I have never, ever, you know, since I got out of automotive school back in 1972, ever worried about some illegal coming along and taking my job. You know, just no matter what, I was the best that I could possibly be. I demanded the highest wages that employers could pay, and I got it. You know, as a matter of fact, my wages were, I've never really worked for a wage. I always worked for a piece of the pie. You know, to me, a worker should be paid on his productivity, period. That's the way it works, you know. You get what you produce, and to me, it's always been a fair thing. And that's another discussion. Ramona, you've got your hand up there. Go right ahead.
I love it. Liberal mentality, 100% employment in the United States isn't good job, Bush, good job, America. It's, oh, it's a scheme to give illegals rights. That cracks me up. I couldn't pass that one up. It just proves that we have full employment in this country if we can't find people to do jobs. Maybe we ought to kick those people out here that are on welfare off of welfare and give them the jobs. Susie said something about the statistics on poor having three-bedroom garages, three-bedroom homes and garages, and said that they were multi-family dwellings, and that's not true. 46% own their own. I heard a guy today said, well, but they have mortgages and car payments. Don't we all? Well, I don't, because I'm old and I own my own home and I pay cash for my cars. But the majority of Americans that have cars and homes, they have mortgages and car payments. So, no, the statistics doesn't say that it's three or four families to a home. It's one family dwelling. Our poor are so much richer than anybody else in the other countries around the world. It's a shame that we cater to them and force the hardworking Americans in this country to have to pay for them because they choose not to take care of themselves. I'm gone.
Well, look, here's one of the issues, and I think, again, this is something that's overlooked very often, if not always. 98%, and by the way, folks, I'm Mexican. So my opinions on this, some of you might think that I'm anti my own race, okay? 98% of all illegal Mexican nationals apply for and get some form of social assistance living. Okay? Go and check out the statistics that are there. They're overwhelming. Many of you here in the virtual auditorium of Pal Talk know that 30% of our jails are inhabited by illegal Mexican nationals Mexican nationals. That's an issue. One of the fallacies is that we need these folks for cheap labor. I can tell you what hasn't been proposed, and that's a good plan for business to get some of the cheap labor that they demand, okay, or that they want. In particular, in farming communities, you also find a lot of prisons. Yep, I said it, prisons. You know, you've got a lot of offenders that will be out within 3 to 6 months that we could, you know, have farmed these crops. Why is it we need to pander to an illegal immigrant group, okay, for cheap labor? Number one, they already work within the prison. The vast majority of them do. So why not give them an applicable skill so that when they leave the walls of that prison, they don't feel trapped? It enables them, it shows them that there is another way, okay, without, again, pandering to the illegal immigrants. Number one. Number two, the issue of border security. This president referring to the Minutemen as a vigilante group is ridiculous. I can guarantee you, as a non-union electrical contractor, if you contacted enough of us federal government, we'd be there and we'd probably be willing to do the work for free. There are always solutions, folks, no matter the issue. Neither political party, in my estimation, is really proposing anything that's vile.
Well, you kind of got a point there. They really are. But the fact of the matter is they're not allowing this to happen out in the free marketplace. They really aren't, you know, which is where it could be. I mean, just close the borders down. you know, and let the market take care of itself. You know, I've said this before. I don't care if I got to pay a little more for vegetables and stuff. I mean, the guy that I go and buy all my vegetables from in this time of season is a farmer. His family works the farm. Some of his hired hands are local boys that grew up around here. Girls, too. And it's, you know, he doesn't have to hire illegal immigrants. He never has. Very successful family farm. I don't know. I couldn't tell you how big it is, but he's got everything you need when you want to go over there. And then some. His stuffed cherry peppers over there are to die for. It's one of the reasons I go in there. But, I mean, all of it's good, you know, and it's all fresh. It's all picked right there, you know. And these are good people, local communities. You know, I sold him and his son, both of them, trucks years ago when I was in the business. And, you know, you can't say enough about it. But the point is, they don't have to hire it. It's like you say, you know, there is no need for the illegal aliens to come in here. You know, at the rate things are moving out there, there is that kind of money around for people to spend on food. And it will go that way. No one is going hungry out there, you know. I mean, as a matter of fact, if you go and take a look at the food pantries in any of your small towns or any of the towns that you live in, you usually find out that there's a couple of days a year when they just basically open them up and give everything away to everybody. You know, that includes all the government cheese and the government rice and all the other good things that are in there. Yeah, I know. Yours truly loves. That's my favorite brand of cheese, baby. Government cheese. I think it's the best. But, you know, that's the point. There's plenty out there. You know, everybody cries about how economies are going to go down when the things that most people use are all of a sudden going to become tight and dear. Well, guess what? You know, over the last year and a half, what's proven that whole system wrong has been oil prices, gasoline. Gasoline doubled in price, up to $3 a gallon. Now, it's back down in a lot of places now, $2.80, $2.82, I'm seeing. But it hasn't stopped people from driving, hasn't stopped people from going to work. Hasn't stopped people from going out and doing whatever it is they want to do. Cars are still all over the road. People are crying because the energy companies are making so much in profits. But they're the ones that turn around and telling you, look, you know, people are sucking it down. There has been no decrease in usage. The demand for it is still as high as it has always been and growing. You know, so it's not like, you know, all of a sudden, oh, gas is so high. Well, people are finding other ways. People got to do this. Pay for the gas. It's not going to kill you. All right, long and tall, you got your hand up there. Go right ahead, bud.
Okay, well, listening to everybody here gives me a few thoughts to share. And first, I would like to agree with Tornado Lancaster that I think his position was anybody in this country illegal should be deported. It's not a question of whether we need cheap labor. It's a question of whether people have entered this country legally or not. And if a person's first act in this country is to break our law, we have a problem internally that we need to get resolved. And when I say we, obviously our politicians are not doing the job. And it's all fine and well for us to discuss this here, and I think it's fantastic, but we, all of us, individually need to contact the people who claim to represent us and tell them what a piss-poor job they're doing and that they're not listening to what we want. And we know how sensitive these people are, especially around election time. And so that is the time to start contacting your representatives and letting them know what you think. So that's one thought. Another interesting thing that occurred recently, a funny story, is that I was riding my motorcycle in my local town where I live, and I wound up behind a vehicle that had a bumper sticker that said, "Buy everything local." Now, the funny thing is, that bumper sticker was on a Toyota Matrix. And so I pulled up next to the driver and motioned for her to roll the window down. And she looked at me like I had about four or five heads. And but she did roll down the window, and I said, "Hey, your bumper sticker says buy everything local." And she said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, you're driving a foreign car." And she was obviously immediately embarrassed and gave some lame excuse about how she couldn't get the car she needed, American, blah, 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 blah. And at that point, I just I didn't talk any further. I just put the shield down on my helmet and drove off. But I'm in Vermont, and I'm sure most people here have heard about the People's Socialist Republic of Vermont. And please be assured, I don't count myself among the socialists here. Yeah, Howard Dean was from Vermont. In fact, he lives less than 2 miles from me. And just an outright nutcase, just like Bernie Sanders and Leaky Leahy. I'm sure everybody knows about Leaky Leahy. And be assured that not everybody in Vermont is a socialist like all these left-wing loons we have here. Just another comment on the free market system is... And Tornado might be interested to hear this perspective, because I'm an employer as well, and it's really hard to find employees that have a good, decent work ethic these days, and it doesn't seem to matter how much you pay them. And in fact, the people who have the least qualifications seem to be the people that want the highest pay. So at the same time that I agree illegal workers should be deported and should not be allowed to work in this country, and in fact employers should be punished for employing them, we have to be sensitive to the fact that everybody wants cheap this and everybody wants cheap that. Everybody wants Walmart prices. They want the lowest price. They want it now. They want it immediately. Trying to deliver that as an employer can be a great difficulty. And employers walk a very thin line. It's can often be a very thankless job. So it's heartening to hear that people in here support local farmers and local business people and so on. These people work very hard, and the hardest part of their job is dealing with employees. So let me stop talking now, and I'll start listening.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Hey, you're a neighbor of mine. I live in Berkshire County, just south of you. You hit the nail on the head there on a couple of things. You know, it does seem that way to a lot of employers. You know, the guys that are the least competent are always the ones crying for the highest pay. You know, I've always found that anywhere I worked, though, and it's one of the reasons I was glad I worked in the position that I did. You know, where you got a piece of the action there, you know, so to speak. You know, as a mechanic, we got paid on basically a percentage of whatever the labor charge was that they were taking in. And if you didn't do the job right, well, guess what? You were doing it over again for free. And, which was your incentive to don't go rushing through everything trying to make a buck. You know, it had to go out of there right. I mean, obviously, you're going to try to cut corners where you can to save a few, save yourself some time, make a few dollars on the job. But, you know, the fact of the matter was, if you cut too many corners or really a lot of times, you know, depending on what you could, you couldn't cut any corners on stuff. You know, you just had to work hard, work fast, work diligent, and be very diligent. Because if you weren't, you were getting that job back to do again for nothing. And, there were always those guys that couldn't turn anything out right the first time, always got it back, and demanding that somehow or another they be paid for being screw-ups. That was beyond me. I'd turn around and tell them after a while, say, you know, look, pal, you're in the wrong business, you know. I'm sure you would find much more gainful employment in either the housekeeping or food service industries. All right, Anna Karina, you have been sitting there waiting patiently with your hand up. The mic is yours.
Oh, I'm never patient, but I can wait. I'm good at queuing because I'm a Brit. Last year in the President's State of the Union address, one of the things that he touched upon was the development of a guest worker program, and that was applauded by the rest of the House, and people seemed to think that that was probably a good idea. I think probably modelled very much on the German concept. Has that ever come to pass? Has that ever been taken forward, or is it something that has been abandoned? And now that you're looking at the creation of the illegal immigrants, making them legal, rather than the development of such a program that would put them in into some sort of perspective. Thank you.
Well, to answer your first question, we've actually always had a guest worker program here. You know, it was called the work visas. And a lot of employers applied for these and got them and worked with them. Generally, it helped to have political connections. The owners of a very famous hotel up the road from me here, former Democrat representative from the state, always had it and cried right after 9-1-1 when a lot of them were terminated and he couldn't get them anymore and he had to hire locals just to turn them upside down. Sorry, you know. But as far as what happened then, no, we've managed to shoot everything down. At this point, everything is pretty much in a stalemate as far as anything moving forward. And I would like to think that a lot of the credit for that goes to right here to the people in this room. We're very motivational in getting out there and faxing our congressmen, faxing our senators, talking to them, calling them on the phone, writing them letters, and basically pestering them right to death so to make sure that nothing got passed on the last gist there. And we'll see. You know, they still haven't really come out with anything new to replace the last shoot down. Tornado Lancaster, your hand is up. The mic is yours.
Yeah, I believe you'll see that probably after the next election cycle, as I said earlier. I mean, they want it. Yeah. They realize the American people don't want it. It's going to come down to one of them slim margin votes. It's going to squeak through something. But I believe it after the next election. They're going to lose votes over this. They push it too hard. But make no mistake about it. That's exactly what they intended to. What I don't see is how they're going to limit the scope of these people's employment with this guest. I mean, are they going to be earmarked for you know, vegetable pickers? And you know, what I think this is going to be is a broader way to lower the American wage through this program. You're going to find these people to be truck drivers, construction workers. It's going to get to the point they're not going to be taking the jobs in the field. That might be what we're scrambling for one day if we allow this program to go forward. But I think it's a matter of time. I think it's, just like they do everything, that, it's just, they'll talk about it and bring it up again and dress it in such a way that it can be sold without a whole lot of rejection the next time in the ballot box. So, yeah. So it's coming. It's coming anytime.
Yeah, it could. It well could. I think the one thing that a lot of people are overlooking, and especially when Bush first proposed the guest worker program and his first speeches on what he was talking about with all the illegal immigration and blah, blah, blah. He was very adamant about telling them that anyone that wasn't here illegally, he was going to be sent home, under the first plan, which didn't even get to square one in Congress. But one of the points that he had made during that, and I think it was a worthy point that went overlooked by about everyone, is the fact that American employers had to prove that no Americans wanted the job. Now, that was all he stated. Well, let's sit down and think about that for a minute. Let's parse that out. How does an American employer prove that no Americans want the job? Well, he can advertise. But, has he really proven anything just because nobody answered his ad for his low-paying job? No, he's got to prove it. Well, in order to prove it, he's going to have to end up going down to the unemployment agencies and the various government people who will have to certify him for allowing him to have an illegal alien come in, or have an alien come in to take that job. And these are people that you're talking about now are bureaucrats and everyone else who've got a job to do, and their job will be to see to it that people who are already collecting money from the system are now looking to fill those jobs. So he's got where that employer would have to go to prove it is down to his local board of labor, his local unemployment board, whatever the name of they call it in your state. And here it's Department of Education and Training or something like that. Now, they don't even call it Jobs Department. But it's along that kind of thing, and that's exactly what they're looking at. It's, before an employer can go and say, here, you have been approved to get in someone who is from out of the country to come to your job, he's going to have to go through all these people that are collecting from some source or another. And they're going to have to be offered a job or face losing their whatever it is they're collecting. Now, these people are generally fair about this, too, for anybody that's out there that's listening. You stop and think about it. During the Clinton years there, I did manage to find myself in a position of being laid off for a while. And it was no big deal. I actually took the layoff and went to work for somebody else, not making quite about the same amount of money.
in the Department of Labor there just made up the difference. You know, so it was kind of like I was doing an easier job that I was having a whole lot more fun at and still making the same money. The employer didn't even have to come up with it. It was coming out of the, you know, out of the unemployment compensation that I was, that I had paid into for up to that point. Yeah, I know. They tell you it's the employer that pays into that. But let me tell you something. The employer doesn't have that money to pay into it unless you're there supplying, creating that wealth for him to play into that. You know, never forget that. It's like Social Security. You know, they sit down and tell you that, oh, you're paying 7.2% or 6.7%, and your employer is paying, is matching that. Well, your employer would not have the funds to match that with if it wasn't for your labor being in there. So that's all your money to start with. That's the way I look at it. You know, me, it's I'm paying on an insurance policy, and every now and then you got to collect on it. That's the way it works. One conservative guy, you got your hand up. Go right ahead.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you for that. Quickly to Cassandra from the UK's point, the whole guest worker thing and the politicians standing up and clapping and ultimately showing a visual approval, what politician is going to want to alienate the fastest growing minority group in the United States of America, meaning the Hispanics? Look, the issue is, yeah, we do need cheap labor. You know, and a lot of folks would ultimately agree with that in order to keep the businesses here. Our liberal friends would complain that businesses are going overseas, so on and so forth. They'll bring up NAFTA and GATT and all the other type of rhetoric that they have in the past. Okay? But where we all differ is the ways in which this should be done. Okay? Case in point, an idea is I was listening to some of the folks here in Pell Talk bat this about. One of the things that I would like to see is government work with business, in particular, taking into account, let's say you have Caterpillar. It's really big in your state. What's wrong with Caterpillar Junior High or Caterpillar High School? Why do I say that? Because then the school that sponsors them would come in and teach these folks, these young people, practical job skills. What would that also mean? Lower taxes, because as a chartered school of this business, that business would be forced then to pick up a large chunk of the taxpayer tab. What does that mean? More money in people's pockets. These are all practical solutions not currently being taken into consideration by the government. And it is really quite sad. You know, and it goes into health care and all other types of issues. Someone here in the Pell Talk virtual auditorium says, how do you then deal with a charter school sponsored by a religion or a political group, or of a political, you don't. And there are very easy ways to screen for this. Okay? So right away, the emotional inclination comes in and says, hey, they might be run by a religious group. No, and there are ways to check. Just as we check someone else's credentials, we can check to make sure that these companies aren't being run or their funding isn't being given to anyone that we as the American taxpayer would disagree with. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, this is something I've often said about higher education. You know, personally, I don't think the public should be responsible for any education beyond the eighth grade. I've said that, and you just hit the nail right on the head. Businesses and future employers should be paying for higher education, right on up through whatever college level it is. And if they want to have the people that they're putting through that college education pay them back, I don't have a problem with that either. You know, let's look at it this way. Suppose you're going to go out, you want to be an engineer. Okay, well, you apply to the engineer school, and the engineering industry takes a look at you and says, you could be good for this industry. Okay, here's your education. Now, you go out when you're done, and you find a job in that industry. Well, if it costs you 5 or 6 or 8% of your education over a period of 10 years to pay it back, fine, no problem. You know, you can look at it as a loan on your education. Keep the government out of it.
You know, that way, failing industries, hey, they ain't going to have money for education. They can go down quicker. And successful industries will find that, you know, they will be able to pick from the cream of the crop and move it right on forward. You know, I have no problem with that. None whatsoever. You know, I mean, I look at it this way. You know, when you go into to an area, especially in a tourist area like this one, where every single waitress in every restaurant has got a degree in something, that's a wasted education. I'm sorry, but there's $100,000 that somebody poured down a pit as far as I'm concerned. You know, if they're out there digging in somebody's garden or mowing someone's lawn and they got a bachelor's degree in political science, there's $100,000 that just went down the hole. And that's tax money for the most part, okay? Not that they're getting as many Pell Grants and whatnot out there, you know, because nowadays things are a little different. You know, they are more on the loan end of things than they are on just outright giving you money. But if you can prove you're poor enough, yeah, they'll give you the money to go, you know. But that's where it needs to be changed. Industry needs to fund the education. You know, I've always said that. Okay, Dakota Music Man, the mic is yours. Hello, Dakota, are you there? All right, well, you're about to get walked on there, Dakota. Sorry, we gave you a shot. Long and tall, the mic is yours. Dakota, if you want to keep your hand up.
Hey, BB, I just want to question what you're saying about employers paying for secondary education or, I guess, college or trade school or whatever for employees. After 25 years of being in the workforce and 16 or 17 of them being self-employed, I would question why is it the employer's responsibility to provide education for a worker? If the employee is a current worker, if you've already hired them and you want to advance their education, I certainly understand that, and it can provide an obvious value to the employer. But to say that business should be responsible for instance, an undergraduate degree for somebody, to me that doesn't make sense, nor is it in line with our capitalist economy. When is it the individual's responsibility to pay for their own damn education? They're the ones that are going to be reaping the rewards of it, as well as the employer, arguably, but I'm not understanding why the employer is responsible for providing somebody's undergraduate degree. Here in Vermont, we have an ultra-left-wing socialist legislature who is hell-bent on the state providing everything for everybody and having the government teat be so big that it cannot possibly be sucked dry. The problem is, in the process, all of us as individual taxpayers are being sucked dry. And with a $30 million or so surplus this past year, all our legislature could do is think about how to spend it. It would not even occur to them that the taxpayers had been overcharged and now they were due a refund. It just didn't even cross their mind. One of the programs, I mention this because one of the programs that they created and was endorsed by our Republican governor, sadly enough, is a program where taxpayers fund more grants and education and training and so on for workers. And I'm not anti-worker, and I don't want to sound that way, but I'm trying to figure out when does it become my responsibility as an ordinary tax-paying citizen to pay for somebody else's damn education? I already paid for my own. And I'm just not getting that. Maybe it's because I'm a selfish capitalist pig. I don't know, but the problem with this, these programs that are socialist utopia goal-oriented, is that they suck the life out of people who want to work hard and get ahead on their own. And if you're working hard and you want to get ahead and you're willing to put in the time and effort, it's very discouraging to see other people who sit around on their ass all day and do nothing and collect welfare or get free money for college or get free health care because their income is only 300% of poverty or whatever the free government program might be. That was not the intent of the Founding Fathers. The Founding Fathers wanted to provide a country where you had the right to succeed and you had the right to fail. And nobody was going to provide for you and feed you and clothe you in the absence of your willingness to take responsibility for yourself. So a long-winded way of asking a question of when did I become responsible for paying for somebody else's education?
Well, okay, good. Perhaps I didn't explain it as thorough, but the point that I'm saying is once the industry funds someone's education, well, they can turn around and get it right back from the person. You know, I mean, I look at it this way, you know, just suppose the automotive industry needs engineers. Well, then I would expect the automotive industry to qualify and screen applicants into the engineering program. And then for them to initially fund that engineering degree for this person. When the person gets a job in the engineering section for some automotive company, he turns right around and pays that money back, even with interest. So he is responsible for it. It's not like he's getting a free ride here. You know, I would just, you know, my point is that if the industry wants to compete and excel, it's going to need good employees in it. And why should the rest of us have to pay for someone's education so that they can reap the benefits? You know, the way I see it, the industry should put up for the education. Now, on your part, where you're an employer, okay, I don't know what sort of education, you know, your employees need. If they don't need anything beyond an eighth grade education, then obviously you're not going to be responsible for putting anything above it. You know, I mean, let's face it, I don't know what sort of employment you're in. But if you need people that have college degrees and whatnot, there's no reason that you can't get together with other guys in your industry and form something to get people into this. You know, if not, what you end up with is exactly what you're complaining about. Everyone else having to pay for someone's education. And the point of the matter is, you know, and the biggest thing I'm trying to stop is people out there with useless degrees. You know, people should be going to, if they're going to go out there and get money spent on an education, then they should become productive people. You know, who are making things, who are making products, who are involved in the design and manufacture. You know, and let's face it, there are tons of people out there who do this on a daily basis, even indirectly. You know, I sold cars for a living, and you know, one of the motivational forces that I have always had behind selling cars was, you know, maybe you could even call this a little socialist, but the fact of the matter is, every time I sold a new car to a person, 10,000 people got paid to work for another 5 minutes, you know, and that was a heavy responsibility, one of the things that I looked at. Now, the fact of the matter is, when I sold that car, I took a hefty paycheck for it, and that's because of my skills in being a salesman. You know, there was a lot of training that I had to go through. I had to put, you know, easily 5 or 6 years into the business before I knew what I was doing. Which is that way with any kind of a skilled job. I mean, even as an auto mechanic way back when I was a kid, you know, I was 5 years on that job before I could command the top pay, you know. And a lot of guys who had started out with me never made it that 5 years and went off into the housekeeping and or food service industries or somewhere else. You know, they didn't make it. They washed out, you know. And then the same thing here. I mean, I think what this would allow was, like I say, you know, They're only going to fund that education up front. They're going to, you know, the funding agency will get that money back in the end. But in the end, everyone wins, you know, is the way I look at it, and especially the taxpayer who doesn't have to front any of this up front. Because I don't think it should be up to the taxpayers. I think it should be up to the individual industries. And like I say, it's going to be the responsibility of those people applying for these jobs to eventually have to pay for it. Now, you know, the flip side of this is, okay, yeah, you went and got, you know, you went in 4 years and you got a degree that will help you find a job in some industry. Well, you know, if you don't find a job in that industry, well, as far as I'm concerned, you don't have to pay it back. You know, it's only if you find it in that industry, you know. But, of course, you'd be crazy now to go in and get a four-year degree into something or be highly trained to work in an industry and then waste it going looking for something else. You know, chances are good that you're going to have to go to another industry to find a job and have to go through the same process all over. And they might look at you and say, hey, you know, there's plenty of jobs in the industry you were just trained for. Why didn't you go there? Or if there were no jobs, they're going to turn around and say, look, we got a whole pool of talent here. These are smart people. Let's train them and put them in here. Don't worry. They'll be paying us back. You know, so that's really the way I look at it. It's you know, in the end, it comes down to personal responsibility, but it's still a way for the industries to get the best, the cream of the crop in employees, you know, for them to weed out who it is that belongs there and who it is that doesn't. You know, they're going to need, and I mean, there's going to be a lot of qualifications here, you know, aside from just talent. There's going to be ambition. There's going to be a willingness. You know, something there. People are going to have to apply for this. They're going to have to show some talent for the job. They're going to have to show whatever. You know, I have no problem with them putting people through a screening process, an extensive screening process, before they accept any applicants, just like any other employer. You know, why not? There's no problem with that. You know, and as long as you know that you're going to get somebody in there that's good and then eventually is going to pay you back and be a benefit to the whole industry and society as a whole, go for it. All right, Dakota Musician, you've had your hand up there. Have you got the mic this time? Now, worst thing that happened on the radio is dead air. One conservative guy, it's all yours. Go ahead, bud.
When you look at it on the whole, 50% of just about every state within the United States budget is spent on what? It's spent on education. It could ultimately, to my friend Long and Tall here, it can ultimately be a win-win in a couple of different scenarios. Okay, you can offer tax incentives for the business that partakes in one of these charter schools. Number two, they're getting a worker skilled for their specific business needs. Again, we're talking, keeping it in a very regional perspective, catering to that business, okay? And number three, it makes the employer as well as the future, or maybe not even future employee, feel more vested in that community itself. And these companies that have a deeper investment into their respective communities usually stay there for longer periods of time. So there is ultimately three wins. Not to mention, the money that could be saved by the taxpayer of that individual state and what could then be done with that money. Okay? So ultimately, I don't think you're going to see the money sucked out and not put somewhere else by our government. Okay? Whether you're like in Illinois, like I am, or, you know, anywhere else. But ultimately, that is one of the solutions. Right now, what we know, the system that we have in place is functioning moderately well if you look at the economic statistics. But I definitely want to see a higher growth than 3.4. Part of the way in which to do that is to make sure that our workers are skilled to fit those specific jobs. Again, people don't normally gravitate to a specific area to find a job. The vast majority go with what they know and what's been within their communities for a lifetime.
Wow, well put. The man's got his ducks in a row. I like that. I could dissuade you from there. You're absolutely right. Thank you, sir. All right, great one. You have your hand up. Go right ahead. It's all yours.
I'd like to take an entirely different point of view for a moment. You know, we look at this huge educational expense and the very little value we get in the outcome. I mean, as you said, you know, you end up with, you know, PhDs driving cabs and master's degrees serving restaurants and all sorts of dumb stuff. But that's for sure. And then to make matters worse, it takes like, what, $500,000 or so to become a doctor or something like that, and only the rich can afford to send their child to school to get that sort of education. And so we have, you know, few doctors, and they get paid well, and we have a shortage of doctors in the society and so on. I mean, there's all those problems. But there is a better way of doing it. If in fact, our government was focused on, you know, what was best for the people, they would look at it entirely different. But the truth is that they're focused on special interest groups, the people who pay them so that they can run their billion-dollar election campaign, and that's why we end up with the type of problems we have. But if you were to look at this in a generalist type of sense, then you would do it entirely differently. With today's technology, we can have things like learner-paced instruction on the web. So $100,000 spent would have the leverage of millions and millions and millions of spent. Think how much it costs to run one classroom for 40 students for 1 year. It's a huge amount of money, you know, at least $100,000. And yet if you put $100,000 into, say, a learner-paced instruction program on the web, you know, where you had everything necessary for someone to learn at their own pace, and then take the exams at the various schools, then all of a sudden our educational wouldn't take $500,000 to become a doctor. The people who were competent and able to do it would become doctors, not the people who, in fact, were paid for by their parents. See, it's where we put our money that matters. It's not necessarily just, you know, who pays the money. It's where we put that money. If we put in, you know, $50 million into an educational program on the web, the results of that would be purely stunning. They would have unbelievable consequences. Your mic.
All right, well, thanks. I understand what you're saying here. You know, it's just trying to get more productive money or more product from what the government's spending on money here or what money the government is spending on education. You know, the point here, though, that I'm trying to make is that we're trying to get the government out of it. You know, the government is already running too many different facets of our lives, you know, and witness that everything the government touches, they screw up. You know, and they're doing this with the education system right now. They have been at it for about the last 30 years, and it hasn't gotten any better. So it's, you know, the point that we're trying to make here is, A, fix education, B, get the government out of the way. At least that's the way I'm looking at it. I mean, I understand what you're saying here, and as far as what you're saying, believe it or not, I think you've already peeked at the future, because that is on its way. There are many, many online courses out there that you can take that are a fraction of what it would take for you to go to that college, buy all the books and sit in the classrooms, pay for a dorm or pay for an apartment offside, pay for all your meals, blah, blah, blah. You can do it at your own pace, around your own hours. I mean, that future, for the most part, is here and growing, you know, growing at quite an outstanding pace. Matter of fact, my wife had put in one inquiry into one of those and has gotten 8 or 10 phone calls from different ones. Matter of fact, I did too, and I turned them all down. I'm 50 years old. I've made it. I don't really need any more education at this point. Nothing beyond which I will supply for myself. But it's happening. I think you're looking at the future, and the future is there. You know, and I think you will see more and more of this coming out of the private sector. You know, which is where it needs to come from. Like I say, you know, the education should be funded by those that are going to benefit the most from it. And it shouldn't just be everyone pitching in to just give an education to everyone. Because, I mean, let's face it, you know, it's the liberals out there on the hard left that want to just see everybody have a college education. Well, you know, what the point they're trying to make here is that everybody's got to pay for everybody to have a college education. And you're pouring so much money down the tubes, it's just, you know, it's a waste. One conservative guy, you got your hand up. The mic is yours.
I think sometimes we lose the sense of the objective. Whether you're liberal or conservative, moderate or, you know, left-wing, whatever you want to call yourself, whether you're Republican or you're Democrat, we all want the same thing. And the bottom line is, and again, irrespective of political ideology, we all want better educated children, yes? See, we just differ with our liberal counterparts, I think, on how things should be funded. Ironically, to Great One's point, That was something that Newt Gingrich spoke very feverishly about last time he was at the Annenberg Group, which I thought very enlightening. But on the flip side of that, a great one, and I don't know, maybe Thomas or Long here in text have some ideas, but how do you then cater to the special needs kids, those that might be autistic, those that might be ADHD or, whatever they've been diagnosed with? How do they fit into the equation? Someone mentions here in the Pal Talk room about the poor and underprivileged, the disenfranchised. My contention there would be with the business is they wouldn't be poor and disenfranchised because they would have, again, the businesses indigenous to their communities that would be, funding or helping to fund these schools. Lastly, I just wanted to kind of take a poll on the point that I made a little while ago. How many of you have lived within your respective communities your entire lives or in and around the same state? I know I have. I've lived in Illinois my whole life, and I wanted to get a job set. Now, granted, because I live in a huge community, okay, meaning in Illinois, there was a diverse job set to take from, okay? But the vast majority of us don't move from New York to California or, so on and so forth. They don't do it. Just get the skills you're going to need to do to survive. I think sometimes people overestimate themselves, but most importantly in today's society, they underestimate it.
Well put. All right, Mr. Thomas Wolfe, I see your hand is up there, but I'm going to have to beg you for 1 minute to just hold off. I will promise you will be right up, but we have hit the top of the hour here, and it is time for the various radio networks that are picking up this show to earn some money. It's part of the capitalist treat out there, one of the things we do each week. But folks, you are listening to the Politics Cafe, www.hernco.com and the ASI Radio Network, and we will be right back.
This is Pal Talk, www.paltalk.com, the world's largest interactive voice and video community. Paltalk.com. Communication beyond words. In a time where good and evil have become completely distorted, one bright ray of light shines through. Politics Lobby 4. A modern-day battle of epic proportions. One light, many voices. Frontline with Kit Murph. The Politics Cafe with Mark Belcher. And the Extreme Court with Randy Wright. Good versus evil. Light against dark. And fact versus fiction. Stay informed, arm yourself, and prepare for the battle. www.politicslobby4.com. Now is the time. ASI. Audio. Are you ready? Video. Interactive. And you can catch it all, that's right, at ASI.
Hello, my friends. America, and indeed the world, has reached a crossroads in history. The global war on terror is real, and our servicemen and women, as well as their families, have felt it firsthand. This is why I, everyone's favorite self-appointed activist judge, Chief Justice Randy Wright, am inviting you to visit politicslobby4.com. That's www.politicslobby4.com to show support for our troops. Join shows such as Frontline with Kit Gerald and the Politics Cafe. Remember, we're in this fight together. Thank you.
Hey, this is Bill from PoliticsLobby4.com reminding you to join us throughout the week for the best radio programs the internet has to offer. Shows like Frontline with Kit Burke, saluting our military and their families. The Politics Cafe with Mark Belcher, news and commentary from a regular guy. And The Extreme Court with Randy Wright, today's issues and Constitution. And when I say join us, that's just what I mean. Join us. Be a part of the show. Hope to see you there. That's www.politicslobby4.com.
And we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe, www.hernco.com and the ASI Radio Network. Easily to join the room here, folks. All you got to do is go to www.politicslobby4.com. At the orange bar at the top, you just click it, and it will bring you right into the room here. All right, now, there was somebody who was waiting up there, and dang, he took his hand down. I really wanted to hear what he had to say. I apologize if I made you wait too long, but it's one of them things we just got to do here. At any rate, great one. You are up and you are ready, my friend. It's all yours. Take it.
Thank you. I said before that, you know, I think the big problem here is what we really need is a government that actually represents the people as opposed to representing the special interests that it costs like $1 billion to run an election campaign in the United States, you know, $500 million per party. And, of course, everybody who runs, you know, has to collect money. That's why they start their campaign so early and the rest of it, so they can create organizations to collect money. The truth is that they no longer represent the people. They represent, you know, the drug companies or whoever it is that actually funded their campaign. And this has caused some terrible problems. Just terrible problems. I mean, drugs you can buy very cheaply outside of the United States. You know, you pay 10 times or 100 times the price in the United States for the same drug. This is not good. Plus the fact that if you were, just think of it this way, if you were sitting on the board of a major drug company, if you personally were sitting on the board, your job is to make sure that drug company makes as much money as possible. That is your job, and you'd be evicted from the board if you didn't do it. But the truth is that's not necessarily always the best thing for the people. I mean, given a major drug company, is it better to develop some sort of drug that you have to take for the rest of your life to reduce the symptoms of your disease, whatever it may be, diabetes or whatever? Or is it better to invest money into a cure for that disease? You know, maybe you could spend it for 1,000 times more. But is it still worth doing? No, of course not. It's always better to develop something to relieve the symptoms of a disease. And that's exactly what the whole healthcare system's all about. If you actually looked at every medical paradigm, every drug, you would discover at least 90% of them, maybe 95% of them, have to do with relieving the symptoms. Don't solve the problem, but make a long-term profitability for a drug company. See, some things are really, really better done by capitalism. In fact, most things. But some things, you know, like maybe finding a cure for cancer or something, be better done by somebody who wasn't capitalistic. I mean, consider that just a while ago, for example, they discovered that, you know, injecting vitamin C would cure many forms of cancer. The truth is that should have been pointed out, you know, 30 years ago. In fact, it was by somebody who actually got a Nobel Prize. But nobody followed up and did any research on it. And because they were talking about taking the vitamin C orally, it didn't work. It's been shown that, you know, the issue here is a very simple issue. What is it we're up to? What is it we're up to? If you're a drug company, you're up to making money. Is that always best for the people? No, of course not. Is the medical system that's currently in various countries the best for the people? No, of course not. In some places, it costs twice as much for medical care as others. Like the United States spends 15% of gross national product on medical care. And their outcome is worse than many other countries that spend half that. Canada spends 9% of gross national product on medical care. Is the Canadian system half as effective? Most people would say no. The truth is that these things are all based on politics.
and perhaps they shouldn't be in some cases. Perhaps there is better ways of doing it. Your mic.
All right, thanks. I think you just talked your way through your own argument there. You really have. You know, beware of things like the vitamin C injections and blah, 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 blah. You know, don't forget that one thing that has occurred here in the last 10 years is the explosion of information via the information superhighway. You know, you're sitting in a little off-ramp on it right now, and, you know, we hear about these things. You hear about everything. The fact of the matter is, though, the things that will end up working on such a matter, people are going to find out about it. You can't keep secrets anymore, and that's the big, big fact. I understand what you're saying, though, you know, and I understand how money controls a lot of things. But the fact of the matter is, we already have a system of checks and balances in place to take care of just such a situation. You know, it's called Election Day every 2 years. You know, that's why you have one. You don't like what's going on, you pull the bum out of there and you put another one in there that says he's going to do better and you make him prove it. Or he don't get to stay. Good ones that manage to do the job usually manage to hold on to that seat for quite a while. But they've got to do it. You know, and they've got to be coming through for the most amount of people, you know, in each time. Because let's face it, they are democratically elected or they don't stay. You know, they're democratically unelected also. You know, I hear your point, you know, but I think that what you're finding out there, that most of these are being addressed, you know, by a free and open society, and capitalism will rule the day at the end. You know, it's like the drug companies. I mean, it's like coming up here and saying, well, wouldn't it be better if they invested in a cure? What makes you think they're not working on a cure? If they can get a cure and they can patent it, let me tell you, buddy, you build a better mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door. They will have a lock on that cure, and they will be able to make millions off of it. And then they know this. So it's not like I have a hard time believing that, you know, they're not working on the cures with it. Personally, to be honest with you, as far as medical science and whatnot is concerned, I think that compared to what we will probably see in 200 or 300 years from now, you know, I think 200 or 300 years from now, people are going to look back at us and say, you know, we were one step removed from the cave. You know, maybe a step and a half removed from the witch doctor. You know, we got a long way to go. I don't think we've even scratched the surface. You know, let's face it, you know, they still haven't even figured out what it is exactly that keeps you alive out there. Well, they know all the processes, but those processes should continue to work indefinitely if you look at them. People should never die, but they do. You know, we have immune systems that should keep you from getting sick from anything, but you still get sick. You know, so there's many, many, many things out there that we have not even begun to scratch the surface on. And, you know, and I think a lot of this is going to be exploded right here on the Internet more than anywhere else. Thomas Wolfe, you've got your hand up, my friend. Sorry I made you wait so long.
Oh, that's no problem. The first thing I want to say is I found a room that I like. I like this room very much. And I see a lot of intelligent people here. I've heard a lot of intelligent discussion. So I'll limit myself just to two areas, and they're interrelated. First, I want to talk about our school systems. Our school systems are broken. There's no question about it. Well, thank you. Our school systems are broken, and the reason they're broken, in my opinion, is the influx of illegal aliens into this country. We're not talking about 10 or 15. We're not talking about 10,000. We're not talking about 100,000. By conservative estimates, we're talking about 30 million people are in this country illegally. And that was just too much of a pressure on our school systems. We had probably 20 or 30, and I don't know how many, 20 or 30 million people came here, and they didn't speak the native tongue. So as a consequence, our school systems had to adapt to the students. It was tried to force these people who came here illegally to pay out-of-state tuition. The Supreme Court ruled against that. So what we've done, we've broken the school system by allowing people to be in this country illegally. We allow them to come in and take the seats of students who would be there if not for them, the illegals being there. Many students have fled to private schools at the parents' expense, even though the parents pay taxes. So here's what I propose. I propose we stop the war in Iraq. I propose that we bring home the troops. And I propose we use some of those troops, not all of them, but we use some of those troops to guard our borders. And as far as the American school system, I think it can be repaired once the excess people are eliminated from this country. And we can do that if we have the will. The question is, do we have the will?
All right, well, thanks for your input on that. I'd agree with most of that, except for pulling us out of Iraq. I think that would be goofy at this point in time. That's could be a topic for a whole other night here. But let's keep the conversation flowing here. Long and tall, you got the mic again. Go ahead, bud.
Okay, thank you, my friends. Let's see. The recurring theme I have and I want to convey is... We have to let these people know what we're thinking. And by these people, I mean these politicians who, once they land in Washington, become part of what truly is a ruling class. And it's all well and good and all very touching to say that we have term limits because we can just unelect these nincompoops. Really is not true. Because the power of incumbency is such that only a total dim bulb moron could not be reelected. And the way they're reelected is by promising us the gall darn moon, and we suck it up like there's no tomorrow and believe these jackasses. I mean, there's no better example than Vermont's own Senator Bernie Sanders, an avowed socialist who constantly rails against the quote-unquote rich, whoever they might be, rails against the government, which he is part of, rails against corporations, is angry about everything, hates anybody who has shown any modicum of success whatsoever, and yet this guy is elected instead of a man named Rich Tarrant, who built a company called IDX from scratch, built it to the point where it sold to General Electric just a couple of years ago for hundreds of millions of dollars. He provided him high-paying employment for hundreds of Vermonters, built a huge business. In other words, has the exact skills that we need, and instead... the liberal nuts here in Vermont elected this guy named Sanders who's done nothing but live off the government his entire life. And that is not an exaggeration. And he does so. He's elected by essentially convincing people that they're victims of somebody. Somebody's screwing them. Somebody's taking advantage of them. And by God, we just can't have that. He hates capitalism, he hates success, he hates business people, and yet he's just a shoo-in in every election. So it kind of reminds me of the quote, "We have met the enemy and it is us." Because it is us, and we tolerate these idiots that really have very little competencies in many, many cases, certainly not all cases. And part of the reason that we tolerate them is because they bring the pork home. So if we really want to see the problem, I hate to say it, folks, but we've got to go look in the mirror. And I don't know what you all do, but I write to these people all the time. I send them emails all the time. My local legislators, my local senators, my senators, my idiot senators in Washington, Leahy and Sanders, who are a couple of useless pieces of trash. Pardon the candor, but I make my voice heard, and it's the most I can do. It's the best I can do. It's the least I can do, and of course I vote. And if everybody in America made their voice heard directly to the people who in theory represent them, I think things would change for the better. Just my thought.
Okay, well, thank you very much. It's me again, Dweeby. Just a thought. Maybe a few thoughts. One on, of course, education. Of course, you all saw what I wrote, and I stand behind that. I mean, you look at Ethiopia, you look at Sudan, you look at every other country that does not have an educational system, and one must agree that we are above and beyond Neanderthals, as someone had claimed that we probably are, but we aren't. We are at the forefront of medical society. And the reason being is because we have all the great minds here. Now, I wish we had more great minds here, but it's kind of difficult because of the fact that, you know, immigration and all that, you know, we want more toilet cleaners in our midst. But aside from that, because I know quite a few doctors who have made a lot of mistakes, and they went through the traditional academia, and boy, I'll tell you, they made some mistakes, and I'm not very pleased with that. Just think, if they can go online and hack in, become a doctor just because they read all the answers before you did, okay? That really scares me. Now, there was a few other subjects I want to touch on, but geez, I really forgot quite a few of that because I was just knocked off of my my post there. So I'll just sit back, relax, listen in, and put in my 2 cents worth. It's just my opinion. Doesn't mean it's anybody else's. Thanks.
Well, thanks a lot. Much appreciated. When you had mentioned what you had posted in the room there, we just try to remind you that there are thousands of people out there listening tonight on the various networks. Now, Mr. Long and Tall from Vermont, with your problem up there, I feel for you, bud. I know exactly where you're coming from. Like I said, I live right down below you in Berkshire County, and we get your effluent down here. You know, like every good plumber knows, it all flows downhill. And I'm at the bottom of the hill down here, and that's exactly what happens. You know, it's I've attended neighborhood meetings around here where people were just trying to get something done on a neighborhood level, and they have always resolved down to, we need to hire somebody who can apply for government grants, somebody who knows how to do this professionally. And believe it or not, there are people out there that do this, and will do this for organizations who know all the proper steps and what to go through and how to go about securing government money. You know, our representative, John Oliver, got reelected here the exact same way, promising to bring home the pork. You know, managed to bring home enough pork here to start a company called Electric Vehicles, LLC. It's going to be the big savior of Berkshire County, and it was going to do wonders. It was going to save the world and produce hydrogen-fueled cars. Cars were actually going to run on water. You put water into it, and the fuel cell would convert that water into energy, and you're going to use that energy and never have to... Blah, 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 blah. Well, at any rate, you know, that company is now gone. It went to Michigan somewhere. Somebody took it private. Never worked out, but hey, it was your taxpayer money going down the tubes. But the point of the matter is here, you know, aside from that, the millions that are being thrown at these people by the lobbyists out there is what really needs to be stopped. Now, you want to stop that, and this is something that I've been pushing for each and every single one of the candidates who have get in here to try to change one thing, and that is the way lobbying is done. All right, there should be no such thing as lobbying, and your representatives should be representing you. But the fact of the matter is, you know, the only place that they are available is in Washington, in their office. If you can get yourself down there, if you can manage to get through on the phones, blah, 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 blah. You know, if they have an office in their district somewhere, it's generally closed. And it is a nightmare to try to get through to it. Now, if I were the king of the world, the way things would work would be this. That lobbyist, or that representative of yours, when he was not in Congress, and Congress was not in session, he would be back in his district in open session with everyone in his district that wanted to approach him, including lobbyists, on a daily basis. Whether it be business hours or hours after business when he's available for everyone on a nightly basis, what have you, that's where it should be. And if some corporation wants to approach one of our representatives with a good idea, well, he can do it right in front of all the representative's constituents. And they can hammer out whatever it is they want to hammer out and have it firmly locked on and firmly agreed that when that representative goes back to the next session of Congress, he is going back there with the will of the people tucked into his hat. And there will be no mistake about it, okay? Because they will have battled it out in the Democratic fashion in his home district before he leaves there and goes back to Congress. Period. That's the way it should work. And if you wish to approach your representative, you can approach him right in the same place. And if you want to get together with all your buddies and do that, you don't have to travel to Washington. You have to travel no further than outside or inside your district. You can just get together and you go right in there and you sit down and tell Mr. Representative, this is what we want. And if there are other people in your district that disagree with what you want, well, then all of you can battle it out. And Mr. Representative can either sit there and try to make amends or figure out whatever it is that's best. But that way, it will all be done before he goes back to Congress. And once Congress is in session, that's it. You cannot approach the man. You know, period. Anybody. No constituents. You know, unless they get some kind of an emergency basis, something's going on there. Well, you know, I mean, there's always going to be exceptions to the rule. But for the most part, nah, no lobbyists. Sorry. You got somebody with money, let him show up at the district meeting where the representative will be sitting in charge. And let him listen to everybody. You know, let's stop and face it. Hey, the guy might show up, you know, a lobbyist might show up and say, look, I'll give $1 million to your campaign. You're going to hear, you know, 50 people in the room say, yo, what are you doing here, blah, 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 blah. Why don't you take that $1 million and sink it into your community? Maybe the community will allow Mr. Lobbyist here and whatever corporation he represents to come into the community and do whatever he pleases. You know, a million things could work out, but the fact of the matter is it won't be done in secret. Things won't happen. You won't find out about it after the fact. You'll find out about it before the fact. I mean, it's just not enough good things I could say about such a system. You know, where the man would be limited to, you know, being approached in open sessions in his district when he's not in Congress. All right, great one. You've got your hand up again. Go ahead, bud.
I totally 100% agree. However, you do need something in addition to that, because the truth is your politician does need the $1 million at this point. In order to run and win an election, each party needs $500 million. That is the reality of the situation. And as long as they need that, there's not going to be any transparency in government as you would like to see. They're going to collect that, you know, million or bits and pieces of it. And they're going to be beholden to various special interests, and they're going to make promises that you're not aware of, that they actually work for people other than yourself because they need that money. Now, you could, in fact, have campaign finance reform that requires your politicians not to have to have that $500 million. Because, you know, what's the $500 million spent for? Well, it's spent for to buy TV ads and radio ads and whatever. Well, we the people own the airways, and they are licensed to these various, you know, entities, you know, ABCs and NBCs and whatever. And we could just simply say, look, in order to get a license, you're going to have to provide this amount of free time to run an election, so that politicians and we the people no longer have to provide that $1 billion to have an election campaign. Fairly simply done, except anybody who's ever even thought of doing it has got themselves blown out of the water by the media. But of course, the media is totally opposed to such a thing. Providing free time for elections, what a terrible, awful thought that is. But the truth is, until that happens, the politicians won't represent you anyway. They don't. That's, you know, the educational, you know, system is created by the educational lobby, not you. I mean, all the people who have special vested interest in it, you, whether it be teachers, unions, or whatever, contribute money to buy things. And that's the way it works. You know, the war on drugs, you know, like the fact is we've got millions of people in jail. Why? Because of the war on drugs. Why the war on drugs? Well, because we have, you know, a police lobby that's, you know, increased their size. We have, you know, judges that increase their size, courts that increase their size. You know, whole series parts of society that would be affected if we stopped this war on drugs and got the people out of jail. But the truth is, we got more people in jail than red communist China does. Why? Because of the war on drugs. Pretty dumb. This is the way it is. Instead of making money out of something like, you know, and helping people get off drugs, instead we incarcerate them, and it's a pretty darn dumb thing to do. Doesn't work. you know, we have the military-industrial complex. We sure the heck hope that this, they're not the ones, you know, supporting or funding a war. We would certainly hope not. But, you know, we can't be absolutely certain because we don't have this transparency. I actually honestly, sincerely believe that we have an enemy, you know, besides ourselves. You know, as Longtail suggested, our biggest enemy is ourselves because, you know, we may have the best system, governmental system in the world, but the truth is that we're screwing up. You know, when we allow our politicians to work for special interests instead of work for us, we get what we deserve in a sense. So until we have, you know, campaign finance reform, we're just we're dead in the water. We don't have a hope. But the truth is that we do have enemies out there. They've been, you know, fighting us for, you know, 30, 50 years. I mean, they took Americans hostage for 444 days, 30 years ago or so, 35 years ago. I mean, it's not as if the enemy's changed. And whether you fight him or not, he's going to continue fighting you. He's been escalating his war against you. You know, he managed to take down the trade towers on the third attempt. The truth is, you do have enemies. And but the actual truth is, you don't know to what degree, you know, he's being fought, the enemy's being fought effectively. When you have a military-industrial complex, it buys, you know, your political votes. Until we get to control our own government, until we can get those special interests out of there, we haven't a clue what's going on. Your mic.
All right, well, thanks. I go along with everything you said right there except for the campaign finance reform. Good money follows good ideas. It really does. And that's, you know, I can understand the equal time thing, but the fact of the matter is, it ain't going to work out that way. It never did, never will. You know, what you end up with equal time for everybody is you get a million candidates up here that you've got to wade through to hear one good one. That money finds its way around. You got to understand something. As far as living in a democracy, your vote is a dollar. And it really is. You know, you spend your money where you think it is wisest. And it still works out the same way pretty much with campaigns out there. The guy that ends up with the most money for his campaign is usually the one with the best ideas. You know, and it's usually the one with the best ideas for everybody. You know, leave it to the rest of us to pull apart some of these ideas. I mean, you take a look at it. I mean, you're talking about somebody out there that's taking campaign money right now and running things. Let's look at John Edwards. You know, now there's a clown, baby. Now, let's face it, we know this man doesn't stand a chance. Hillary's going to crush him right down. But look at everything he's been through here for the last few weeks. You know, found out that, he's attached to all the people that are foreclosing on homes down in New Orleans. Yeah, he says, we got to go help New Orleans out. Yeah, the way he's been helping them out, taking their homes away from them. You know, he's got a cancer research plan out there now because his wife has got cancer. So everybody's jumping up and down about that. You know, he's got a health care system that he says he can fund for $11.8 billion, going to take care of everybody. When you got $2.3 trillion working out there. Fact of the matter is, there is no good money following this guy. All right, he ain't going to make it. All right, as far as the Democrats are concerned, you got Hillary up there, who is probably coming closest to the middle of it. And what's Hillary doing right now? Defending lobbyists, you know, in a big way. But guess what? She's still going to win the nomination. You know what I mean? Despite the fact that you will hear everybody from the left crying about the money that's getting thrown into it, money from lobbyists, blah, 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 blah. Well, who's picking up the most of it, who's defending it, and who's going to still end up winning? And I think you better check with the rest of your buddies on the left there to find out exactly where they're coming from, because, you know, it's kind of pointing exactly the opposite of what they're saying. All right, my friend Bill, no strings, you're here. Good to see you, my friend. The mic is yours.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's good to see everybody. You know, I came up with an idea a few years ago about trying to ask the government for a grant. I'm thinking somewhere around, I don't know, $10 billion. I'm going to do a long-term study on where all these idiots are coming from. And once I do find out where they come from after about 10 years, I'm going to ask for another grant for another $10 billion. To figure out how to bury the hole so they don't come out anymore. But then again, if we did that, we'd get rid of half our Congress, wouldn't we? The fact is, these government grants don't seem to do anything. or not government grants, government programs. You get the government involved with things, and it tends to corrupt and fall apart more than it does any good at all. So we live in a society that if you have a good idea, you have good plans, good marketing, good ideas, you get rewarded. It's been shown time and time again in this country. Folks, we can stand here and talk about it all night long. We can come up with all these great ideas. But if there is no action, if nobody does anything about it, we're wasting our breath. And to put a little shameless plug in here, Politics Lobby 4 is what they call a chat room on Palatalk.com. That's where this show is emanating from. And we strongly support www.numbersusa.com. They help secure the borders. They keep you informed of decision-making going on in Congress, decision-making going on in the Senate, on the highest levels of government, and give you ways to make a difference all from your computer. It doesn't have to be, you know, long, drawn-out letters anymore. This is the Internet world. You can do something about it. You can become active, as we have here in Politics Lobby 4. Do something. Don't just let it happen. BB, thank you very much for the rant and awesome show you have tonight, as usual. How can I say a great show when all the shows are great? I appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
Hey, my pleasure. And you're absolutely right. The Internet is becoming one of the more powerful tools out there. And we proved it with the border issue that's been going right along here. You know, since we've taken on Secure Our Borders and have moved, we have been moving and shaking people up in Washington. And yes, it can be done. There's no doubt about it. You know, hey, I'll tell you what, my prime example out there I'll always use is, what's his name there, Mr. Long and Tall's buddy, Howard Dean. If Howard Dean can raise $95 million on the Internet, you know, we can do it too. No doubt about it. All right, Clint Long, my friend, your hand is up. The mic is yours. All right, where'd Clint go? He boogied or got booted. Something happens. Okay, my friend there, Mr. William Buckley. Great one, you're up next. Followed by Mr. William Buckley.
Thank you. Well, all I'm really trying to say is we need balance. You know, I mean, there's no one perfect answer for anything. And at least not in my opinion. You know, just to... You know, I'm really opposed to, actually personally I'm opposed to both political parties because both support, you know, the way things are right now. They both support the notion that, you know, you pay $500 million to run an election campaign. They spend $1 billion, and the truth is I know that $1 billion influences everything that happens. Everything. And if we could just somehow stop that, I am also equally convinced that we, the people, own the airwaves, and that if we took those airwaves back, and we would get free election run, free election campaigns, and there's a possibility under those cases that we could start having our politicians represent us. We could start having, you know, the transparency that was talked about, where, you know, a lobbyist comes and makes a presentation that's open, that everybody sees. Right now, that doesn't happen. And until such time as that happens, we are going to continue getting much the same as we have got so far. Your mic.
All right, thanks a lot. You know, just one point here that I got to make with you before I flip it over to Ramona. We don't own the airwaves. We the people. You know, we the people have free access to the airwaves. It's over NPR. And good luck trying to get them to show you both sides of any situation out there. You know, best of luck. But as far as taking the airwaves back, you know, from the people who own the radio stations and from all those sponsors and whatnot that advertise on the radio stations and the people that are on them, nope, I'm not going to get behind that one at all. Sorry there, bud. You know, we the people have got NPR. And if you don't like the way they're doing things, well, there's plenty of people you can scream to. Good luck getting heard. You know what I mean? I don't know what part of the country you're from, but up here in the Northeast, it's all run by a guy in my town named Alan Chartok. And he's as hard left as they come, my friend. Sit down and tell you that democracy is the very best form of government and that everything should resolve down to a democracy. Well, Mr. Alan Chartok happens to be a little power freak, a little control freak. And even if he has nothing more than the power of suggestion, that would suit him just fine. But, hey, good luck with it. You know what I mean? I'm telling you, it's a lot of fun. I don't think, you know, I mean, these guys, good luck getting NPR to try to give equal time to everybody out there. You know, I just don't see it happening. I mean, that's the only part of the airwaves that we, the people, own, and good luck, because we don't own it either, okay? The liberals that have taken over NPR have been there for quite some time. Good luck unseating them. Ramona, the mic is yours.
Finally. First of all, let me make it very clear that I am very much a Republican. But I've sat here listening for about an hour about all the things that we should be doing that all cost money. People criticize Bush and call him a big spender when, except for the war, I think the only thing he asked for was the Homeland Security so that he could try to get all of our intelligence agency into one place so he could keep track of them. Somebody said criticized Bush for calling the people on the border vigilantes. And while I agree to what they're doing and I respect them and back them, actually, that's what vigilantes are. There are a group of people that are not affiliated with any state or federal or city government. So I think that was an unfair criticism of the president. As far as the illegals are concerned, more than half of the illegals in our country today came here legally. For some one reason or another, their legal status was ran out, either their green card visas. Most of them, or a good share of them, applied for permanent status, and for some reason under Clinton wasn't granted it. So I'm not for illegal. I believe they should go home. And I do think that defense probably is a good idea, but I think we can start getting them to go home voluntarily by cutting all services. And I've talked many times in this room about that. If you take away the reasons for them to be here and stay here, then they surely will go home. Buckeye, you're up.
Go ahead there, Buckeye.
I just want to say hello to my friend BB. I've known for years. I've been listening to him. He does a great job. Whatever they're paying him, it's not enough. Anyway, as BB knows, I'm chatting from deep inside my conservative bunker in the shadows of Mount Rainier in the People's Republic of Washington. And I'm surrounded by the enemy. By the way, George Bush was here today, very close to where I live and work. I didn't know they had to shut down highways that Air Force One flies over. They had a portion of I-5 shut down. I guess it was only for 15 minutes, but that can result in a 5-mile backlog. And I was just looking at the TV, the news when I got home, and I'm so close from home I don't have to take the highway. I'm just giggling like a schoolgirl, knowing those libtards in their little cars cursing George Bush because they had to, make them late for their next latte, vanilla latte, four shot. I thought it was special. But ironically, on the subject of, illegal immigration, I'll tell you something happened at work today. As some of you may know, I'm a department manager at Lowe's, and I was helping one of the install coordinators put together some stuff for a carpet install, and the carpet installers were waiting for some carpet pad and stuff like that. Turns out these two guys didn't speak a lick of English. They're in their 20s. I'm thinking to myself, they can't be legal. And we're hiring them? I said, are we going to get in trouble for this? I'm thinking, you know, but I can't prove they're, you know, illegal. But it's like no one will ask the question, and therefore it'll never stop. So I guess the only thing to do is shut down the border tight as a drum and just don't let them in, since liberal governments won't do anything about it. Sanctuary cities? What? Sanctuary? The committee? Why doesn't the president propose cutting off state highway funds for states that have sanctuary cities? Do you remember? You guys remember back in the 70s or 80s? If your state didn't meet the 21-year drinking age, as the government dictated, you didn't get highway fines. So states were forced to raise the drinking age to 21. Why can't we do that? Mike is free, my friend.
Well put, Buckeye. Thank you. Been saying much the same thing right along here. And Ramona, I go along with what you said there, too. Just cut off the services. And I don't mean cut them down. If somebody comes in there and an arm is hanging off or something like that, you fix them up. And then if you find out they're here immediately, once you get the condition stable, there should be a hospital down in Mexico or somewhere, wherever country they came from, that should more than adequately be able to handle it. After all, you've come from a socialist country with socialized medicine. It's always better than what the United States has. Ship them right on back. Same with education. Same with anything else. No doubt about it. Cutting off their services. Now, Buckeye, you know, you hit a good point right there, my friend. Everybody's afraid to ask them. You know, you didn't know what to do. What are you going to do? You're going to go up and say, hey, where's your green cards? You know, Ecuador de Verde, eh? Spit it out. Where is it? You know, if you don't have it, I'll tell you personally, I'd have thought about it. I might have just called the INS and said, hey, I got a couple of illegals down here trying to pick up some equipment on my dock. Mind checking them out, or what should I do? Let them throw the ball. You know, you're paying taxes for these people to do this stuff and make them do their job. That's the way I look at it. I got no problem with it. You know, government agencies. You know, one of the things I liked about Mitt Romney up here was he'll have the state police to detain him. As far as I know, there are no sanctuary cities up here. There may be a lot of people who are doing the sanctuary thing. And I'll tell you what, it's amazing what you will find out up here. And it's a lot of the really rich, the ones that own second homes up here and whatnot. You know, I remember one heiress up here. She got a couple of kids, and they've been sucking off of Grandpa's money forever. Grandpa made a huge invention. I don't want to give away what the invention was, because it'll probably devolve down to exactly who this person is. But they would just go down to the docks, man, just right down in New York City, find someone who came off the boat and looking around and looking for a job, and usually a female, and just drag her home, give her 50, 60 bucks a week, and make a slave out of the person. You cook, you clean, you do this, you do that, blah, 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 blah. And the people would hang out there and do this for them for usually 6 or 8 months until they got really sick and tired of getting pushed around by these people, and then boogie. Hey, it didn't matter then. They just head down to the docks and go find another one. You know, right down in New York City, no problem. There's plenty of them down there. You know, down to Port Authority, help yourself. You'll find somebody. They're coming. And, you know, it's just the way they act. And I got to admit, it is more of the super rich up here that are looking to do that. And these are all the ones that are crying for Democrats, you know what I mean? And hard left-wingers, but they're the first ones that are up to doing it. You know, of course, they're don't ever kid yourself about a left-winger. They are the greediest people in the world, bar none. You know, they want everything for themselves, and they don't want anything for you. They just as soon take it away from you, and as long as they can get it. You know, and they always do this with the, oh, but it's where we really want this for everybody. Yeah, you just want it for yourself. You know, and once everybody has it, you'll have it too. Well, I'll tell you what, they're full of malarkey, and they do not care. But go ahead, go try to get some of their money and see what happens. You know what I mean? You know, I it's like this person here. I mean, for the way they wanted their house run, they should have had a staff instead of one illegal alien in there working, you know, night and day for them. You know, have somebody doing whatever. And I'm talking about a staff of people. It's really the way it would have counted for them. And it was sick, you know. But, I don't know. The fence will work. There's no doubt about it. I know if we put the fence up down there, and we, you know, like I've been saying every week here for quite a while, very simple situation. Just make sure, you know, you don't have to have a big fence. It's got to be enough of a fence. that it's even symbolic, you know. A couple layers of razor wire, not too much. Stuff is impossible to get through. I don't care what anybody says. Go try to find your way through some razor wire sometime. But all you got to have right along in his signs, about every 100 feet or so, and say, this country is currently in a state of war. Any illegals caught in this country will be considered as combatants in that war and will be detained until the end of the war. And then make it stick. And you go around and you start rounding up the illegals. Trust me, those signs and the fact that they know you are rounding up whoever is here illegally will send a flood right back across the border. And the ones that are legally here will be fighting to stay here. That's fine. If they're illegally here, I got no problem with that. None of us do. You know, there are no problem assimilating people into this country as long as they're willing to assimilate our country into them. You know, it's the ones that come up here and try to change things. You know, short of invading Mexico, I can't see us doing much else on that whole subject. Really. You know, I've been saying it right along here. I have no problem with it. We're in Iraq for economic reasons at the end. You know, for peace reasons, you know, for reasons to have, you know, those people become Americanized and live free and under the banner of liberty, same as us. You know, fact of the matter is we have a country on our southern border that does not uphold these principles and is actually running its own little slave society down there, you know, and it is socialist because of this. You know, it all needs to be fixed up. You know, those people aren't coming across that border just so much because it's better here. It's better here because it's worse there. Basically put, Mexico sucks. That's why they're streaming their way across this border. Now, Mexico needs to be fixed, is the way I see it. Buckeye, you got your hand back up. Go ahead.
Thank you, BB. Interesting statistic I heard. I don't know the source of the statistic, so I'll just throw it out there as an unproven statistic or whatever you want to say. 2,000 Americans die each year at the hands of illegal aliens, either through murder or highway deaths, illegal aliens in car accidents killing people, drunk or otherwise. 2,000 a year. And the libs complain and want to wave the white flag over 3,000 soldiers killed, which is a tragedy. Any soldier killed is a tragedy. 3,000 total. But in the last 10 years, 20,000 Americans are dead that otherwise would have been alive had it not been for illegal aliens in this country. Either driving around or crime and murder. Why is it the liberals and Democrats don't care? And I'll tell you why they don't care. Because those are the folks voting for them. The illegal aliens and all the other illegals that are here know that Democrats are soft on immigration. Who do you think they're going to vote for? It's all about votes and getting elected, so American lives do not matter to Democrats. It's absolutely obvious. Thank you.
No problem. Tornado, you got your hand up. Go right ahead.
Well, the problem really is that we have a carrot waiting for these people. You know, a job, something, you know, some kind of money. We're all too willing as Americans to fork out money to these people because it's cheaper on us. Well, you know, we would the guy's name escapes me right now, the New York guy that was picked for Homeland Security chief, until he had, you know, realized, oh, wow, he's got one at home. You know, maybe that's not such a, I mean, this is how widespread it is. You know, BB just described, you know, the people, rich people going down to the docks. So long as that exists, these people are going to go through hell and high water to get here. Plain and simple. As long as they have a carrot waiting for them, they're going to come by truck, by boat, by plane, some way, somehow, they'll get themselves in here. The problem, it needs to be that these businesses, these people that are hiring them, suffer severe repercussions, whether it be padlocking their doors shut, well, you know, whether it be, you know, fining severely these people, you know, so no longer, there's no longer a gain from hiring these people, and take away the carrot. You know, so long as that exists, these people will find a way into this country. Fences are good. You know, I really don't even know if we need a fence so much as we need an economic fence. You know, these people need to be tossed back in their own country to get some change out of their own country. And they'll never do that so long as we got something, some reward waiting for them.
Right on, brother. When are they going to wake up and understand that the carrot is liberty and that it's sitting in their country and they just got to go pick it? No doubt about it. Which, by the way, I got to ask you there, Mr. Lancaster. You must be from Lancaster, PA. I recognize the accent. At any rate, you tell me when you come back up. Moose and Squirrel, the mic is yours.
No, thank you. You know, I can say this safely because I can first say that I do not excel at mechanical engineering, and I don't excel at high mathematics and things like this, but I do excel at reading people. I'm always the one that sees, oh, she shouldn't be with that guy. He's going to do this and that, and he does, you know, but you can't see him. You can't see what he's like, what he. I read people. You know, today I'm riding the bus in Los Angeles, you know, and I read people. I'm reading the illegals. How do you know they're illegal? Come on, get off it, you know. You know they are. I've lived here for 50 years. They don't have kids that fast. They jump the fence, you know, they're here, you know. So you know, we got to get past that, you know, and stop trying to play Parent Trap. Remember the Parent Trap when the twins come down dressed identically so that their separated parents would have to take them on a trip? Which one of us is Sharon and which one of us is Susan? Hard to tell, ain't it, you know? Isn't it? All right, isn't it, you know, whatever. So they come here. How do you know which ones of us are Americans and which are not? Which, you know, you've got the idea. And which ones are pardoned, which ones are not? How would you possibly know that? But so anyway, I speak my mind. All I do is I say, oh, that bus is late still. It's like it was, you know, about an hour and a half late. It goes every 20 minutes. And you could just see when they looked at each other. You could see it. You could see when they looked at each other. Like, who is this guy? Who does he think he is? Doesn't he understand? Because he's in our country now, and he shouldn't have anything to say where we live. I read them, and it's coming to that. In their minds, and the minds of people are a very powerful force, regardless of law and order. The minds of the people, of any people, are very powerful. And we have this to contend with. They believe that we Americans are in their land and in their way. Next on the mic.
All right, Sunshine, we got 2 minutes left at the show here, but the mic is all yours. Hello, Sunshine. Are you there? Well, looks like we lost you. At any rate, we have hit the top of the show, and it's that time once again. Hey, Megazorch, good to see you there tonight there, buddy. Wish we could have got you up to the mic a little earlier. But at any rate, folks, once again, it is time for the Politics Cafe to close up. The tables are all piled high with the chairs. The lights are growing dim, and the maitre d' is over by the door, tapping his foot furiously, staring at me with a glare, wondering when everyone's going to get out of here so he can go and beat feet. I don't know what he's got planned for tonight, but I assume that the truck running and the two heads in the truck have got a lot to do with it. But at any rate, the bar will be open, and the politics lobby here will be open for the rest of the night for all of your chatting needs. And the bar is going to be open, too. Yep, what the hell, I'm going to buy a drink for everybody at the bar. Just step right up. Have a good old time. And for everybody else, folks, you have listened to the Politics Cafe, www.herncoat.com, and the ASI Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. See you later, folks. Thanks for coming on board.
Thank you for joining us for the Politics Cafe. Join your host, Mark Belcher, every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Central Standard Time for the Politics Cafe, coming to you from politicslawbefore.com and ASI Online.